Dear Lord, what a sad little life, Jay.
Now, on FUBAR Radio, it's Pulse of the Nation.
Well, I'm being shady-ish,
Of course you find me, Darren!
Boring! You have to catch me first, I'm like a wicket.
Nah, it's not fun, I've got school.
Bus wankers!
And that was the fucking news.
Here's your host, Andrew White.
Hello, and welcome back to Pulse of the Nation. We've got a lovely show in store this week. I've got my good friend Bobby Mayer in the studio. He'll be joining me as co-host just in about 2-3 minutes' time. We'll recap the news before that. We have a pre-recorded interview with the wonderful Ellie Taylor talking about travel shows. And yeah, we've got all sorts of stuff to get into. The headlines, you know, I was worried, I will be honest with you. A few days ago, I was thinking, fuck, I've got to break the news of World War III on the radio. Things seem to have calmed down a little bit. There was a brief ceasefire, which was, you know... Well, look, I'll leave it to Donald Trump, who perhaps has summed it up most succinctly, which can't often be said of Donald Trump. But this was his genuine response to a journalist. Bearing in mind, this is the leader of the free world, president of the United States. We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Yes, he genuinely said that. That was the genuine expletive direct quote from Donald Trump this morning. And I believe that is the case. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. It's all very intense, but maybe on the retreat, on the calm down a little bit. So, yes, no war this week. Good news. Maybe I should check in every week like that. Like, hey, guys, good news. No war this week. Well, maybe that'll be a fun feature until it's not a fun feature. But anyway, we'll leave that for future Andrew to deal with. And meanwhile, in the UK, the sort of response to what's going on in the Middle East has obviously had a lot of local activism here in the UK, lots of pro-Palestine groups, lots of regular marches against the genocide happening in Palestine. And very sadly, that has sort of been massively over-exaggeratedly pushed back by the government today, as Palestine Action has been threatened to be labelled a terrorist organisation by Yvette Cooper, the Home Secretary. And this is in response to the activists breaking into RAF Prize Northern and spray-painting one of the planes complicit in the Gazan genocide. And it's just like, it's spray paint. Do you know what I mean? Where's the terror in that? Like, I'm not here to necessarily defend the action. It doesn't matter what I think about the action. The point is, spray paint is not terror. Right? It's not an attack, is it? I mean, that's the level of Bart Simpson, and that's terrorism now. We're marching towards a sort of scary authoritarianism, and hopefully there's a legal pushback, and that doesn't go too far. But let's end with some lighter news in Devon, where two bears who have escaped a wildlife sanctuary, Mish and Lucy, they escaped in the Devon Wildlife Centre, and what they did in their hour of freedom. You know, you're a bear, you've lived in captivity, apparently, according to the reports, very nice captivity, but still, nonetheless, you've lived isolated in this spot in Devon for years of your life. What do you do with your hour of freedom? Well, I'll tell you what Mission Lucy did. They ate a week's worth of honey and were so incapacitated by the honey eating that they were very easily caught. So there you go. Those are my heroes this week, Mission Lucy. I think Mission Lucy is all of us. I'm going to bring in my wonderful co-host from the land of many a bear, indeed, Canada. Yes, is that right, Bobby? I don't know.
Allegedly, there's bears, but it is such a vast nation.
Of course, yeah.
They all live quite far north. I've never seen one.
Yeah, and isn't, like, because Canada is so, like, southerly populated that the northern regions are just, like, so sparse.
Yeah, I would say the country is divided into, like, half people, half bear.
Half people, half bear.
Like, I don't know where. The bears do their own thing. We don't interact that much.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. You never come across a bear in real life?
No.
No, interesting. Because I spent ages Googling Devonshire bears, but I just got loads of, like, gay dating sites. So
okay.
Come on, bit of fun. It is a comedy show, let's not forget. So whereabouts in Canada are you from?
I'm from a town called Seaforth, mm-hmm. which is not on a sea or near a fort, but I think they just took the name of a British...
Yeah, one of those sort of, like...
The British Seaforth, and they're like, we're the new one.
Nice. And whereabouts in relation to, like, Toronto, Ottawa?
Like, 3 hours from Toronto, just far enough that nothing fun happens there. You know how, like, you have a major city where, like, there's an exciting nightlife, and, like, and people enjoy... Where I grew up is just outside the belt of joy.
Where
nobody goes out, where they'll have a local bar or pub for a while, mm-hmm. but then no one will go to it, so it'll just close.
Yep.
And someone else will be like, I have a business idea. What if we take that empty building that used to be a bar, and we open a bar there? And then the same cycle will start again.
Yeah.
And then it's, but people, if it's remote enough, people just don't want to have fun.
No, I mean, it's very tellingly, when you were talking about, you know, the big city, Toronto, where people enjoy, you didn't even end that sentence. The verb was enjoy, where people enjoy. Yeah. Where you're from, people just don't even enjoy anything.
No, I don't think so. They work, mm-hmm. they sit, they die.
Is that like on your sort of you know, city flag? It's a Seaforth, work, sit, die.
They work, sit, and die. I think so, yeah.
I relate to that because I'm from Salisbury, which is like very quiet. It is a city technically, but like it's really like a quiet town.
And whenever
town.
You have to say technically.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a city.
You've sniffed it out perfectly. Yeah. But they're very, it's quite wealthy around that sort of area of Wiltshire. So there's lots of entrepreneurial people. So businesses will close down and then exactly that, somebody will go like, well, I can afford to run a business. And it's just like bubble tea shop, handcraft shop, just rotating every six
I'm
months.
I'm always amazed whenever I'm in one of these small towns. And they'll have, like, someone will have, like, our store sells parachutes. And you're like, what is happening? How do you exist? Do you know what I mean? Or, like, or it'd be like an organic tea shop in a town of 3,000 people. And I'm like, I don't know if you guys understand how economics works.
Oh, it's baffling, yeah.
I'm not a genius, but I don't know if the 3,000 people living in this town have enough appetite for organic tea to pay the rent on this building.
It's great. You're halfway there. You've got the supply. Yeah, you're missing a crucial element of the economic equation here. Yeah, that's interesting. I dropped my partner off in Tottenham and I drove here and I drove past a shop called Mr. Hatman. Apparently it's an established 1999, so he's been going for 26 years.
Okay.
He just sells hats. But like not like nice hats, like touristy hats. But it's in Tottenham, so there's no tourists in Tottenham.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm not casting any aspersions upon Mr. Hatman. This is an unrelated thought, but sometimes when people have a business that's been open for 30 years and it doesn't seem like it makes any money, it's just a nice front.
Oh, I see.
That's a good way to glean some money, you know?
Well, it's such a showy front as well, because he'd recently done, and I could tell because he was like standing and admiring it. I assume it was him, the alleged Mr. Hatman.
I'm not even talking about Mr. Hatman. Listen, I want to cast no aspersions upon Mr. Hatman. I'm just saying, you know when there's a front. You know when you just live in a neighborhood and there's a restaurant and you eat the food once and it's disgusting. But that restaurant will just be open for years.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, someone's cleaning some money.
Something's happening here. Yeah. Okay, I see. Well, look, we're not making any accusations against Mr. Hatman specifically, but that
is just an
unrelated tangential thought. Yes, maybe we can get Mr. Hatman on the show.
That'd be great.
He only lives 20 minutes down the road. We could Uber him down.
How do you keep your business going?
Yeah. We could turn this into a business podcast. It's meant to be newsy, but as we've established, the news is very often depressing. So we could become like a sort of, we could be the new diary of a CEO, Bobby.
I could do that, yeah.
Yeah.
You're the CEO, I'm the diary. You just write all the ideas on my body.
I like that. But you're quite a slender man.
You're gonna have to write small.
Yeah. Okay. I'll get like real fine pen.
Okay.
Have you ever done any businessy stuff? Have you ever tried your hand at?
What do you think the answer to that question is? No. Of course not. I'm a comedian.
Yeah. Well, you're quite an entrepreneurial comedian, I think.
Yeah. But the most entrepreneurial comedian is the hardest working comedian is the laziest any other job. Like the hardest people, like that comedian works so hard. That just means they type for 3 hours a day.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Actually, we made this with Michelle last week. We were talking about like people always say, "Oh, you're attractive for a comedian." It's like, oh, the metrics are completely skewed in comedy.
Yeah,
yeah, all over the place. I've got two things I really want to ask you about. As we've sort of covered a bit of Canada, you are, I think, maybe my fifth Canadian guest.
Wow, you're going through us quick.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I made this point with Michelle Shaughnessy before, is the Canadian comedians I really get on with, you're all very kind, which is different to
you.
Yeah, you are all kind to me.
I don't think we're all kind to everybody.
You don't think so?
No, I think the common denominator here is you.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice then. Okay. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. I just like loads of Canadian comedians. You, Kate Barron, Michelle. Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, point is, every time I've had a Canadian comedian on the show, they have taken their opportunity on the air to slag off Quebec. Now,
the
province of Quebec and the Quebecois people. You don't have to pile in on Quebec, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I don't know if I'm smart enough to really say why. I don't hate Quebec, but they always wanted like independence and they love the French language and they're just surrounded by everyone who speaks English. And I gotta say, I wish I had their confidence.
Yeah.
I think that's why everyone kind of, there is a low key level. We all hate them.
You're jealous of
because we're jealous of how much they like themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just sitting around. No one's proud of the fact they speak English in Canada. We just speak English.
Yeah, yeah.
By default, it's not like...
Because the Quebecois also speak English, mostly.
Well, no. Outside of Montreal, necessarily. There's a lot of solo French-speaking people.
Interesting. Yeah. Really? Okay.
Yeah, they just speak French. And wow. But in Montreal, a lot of people are bilingual.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I just want to be like, hey, guys, can you give me a little of that national pride? Like, they have, like, their own celebrities. It's a province of, like, a couple million people, I think. And they, they have people
microcosm
who are only famous in Quebec.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I want to Google Quebec celebrities and see if we can go through. I want them to be, like, very interesting caricature people. Well, maybe I'm hoping too much there, but we'll Google them in the break.
I don't know anything about it, but I think that's why Canada... I think that's where some of it comes from. And some of it comes from, they're always like, we want to leave. And it's like, yeah, leave. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's a similar sort of like parallel with Scotland over here, where there's lots of anti-Scottish English. And it's just like, they've got a sense of national pride that just, as ours has flitted away.
Quebec is a different... Yeah, Quebec's a bit different because I think Scotland at least has that... they have grievances. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Quebec's grievances are. I don't think...
Yeah, because I suppose we've bullied and colonized Scotland to a certain extent, whereas French-speaking Canada and English-speaking Canada is just two different remnants of colonies, right?
Yeah, of people who colonized other people.
Yeah.
We're just two groups of colonizers living beside each other.
That's beautiful. That's the North American story in many ways. Yeah. Okay, nice. That was a very balanced take on Quebec. I think Erica Ila practically says that that we should nuke Quebec.
Really?
I'm putting words in her mouth there, but yeah.
That would be bad because I don't know if
the radius.
You know how nukes work.
Yeah,
I don't think that's a, yeah.
I don't think you could isolate all of Quebec.
No,
yeah.
You can't build the nuke fence. I'd be
the nuke fence.
No, I'd be afraid of the nukes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, we'll research into nuke fences before we commit to any sort of military action.
Yeah. I wish I came on knowing some of the Quebec celebrities, but they. And the comedians there have a way better life, too.
Really?
Oh, French comedy, they love. Oh. They in Quebec, you can just be... They love it. They put so much money into the arts.
Oh, I hate Quebec
like
now.
Like France, they support the arts. They see art being an artist as a legitimate job, the government.
Fuck, that's so... Oh, I'm angry and jealous now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, we do mock the French, but actually, they've got an artistic respect that we just does not exist here.
No.
Fuck, okay. Well, never mind nuking Quebec. I think I'm going to look into Quebecois visas.
Yeah, do you speak French?
No, absolutely not.
We can learn.
A little bit of Spanish. Yeah, we can learn together. We're going to do some Duolingo in the break. We've got our 3 minutes to enjoy these advertisements, and we'll be back with Bobby Mair very shortly.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Well, welcome back. We'll be talking to Ellie Taylor in literally just seconds. But in the meantime, we've Googled Quebec celebrities. I'm just going to read you some names. Bobby, do you recognize any of these people? Paul Amrani.
Yeah, he helped me move once. It was actually crazy. I was just at home and he just knocked my door and said, you need help moving. Yeah.
That's so good. And according here to Microsoft Bing, he is a versatile actor, but also a good friend.
Yeah, a good friend.
Good Samaritan.
I see him as a father.
There you go. Father figure, Paul Amrani.
How old is he again? Forgetting.
He's born in 1972, which makes
That makes sense that I see him as a father then.
Yeah.
He would have been 14 when I was born. So
14?
Yeah.
Yeah, what about Karina Aktuf?
She's been a presence in my life since I was a boy.
what's your favorite film that Karina Aktuf's been in?
One of the French ones, probably.
Yeah, there's loads of French ones here, actually. I believe you. Les Casablancais, which seems like a French Casablanca. Anyway, yeah, there's so many.
I wonder if it's set in not Casablanca.
It was set in some Quebec sort of little...
Just have to call it a different... Yeah.
That's really funny. It's crazy. There's so many. Literally, there's all these Quebec celebrities and millionaires as well. Some of them are like top five richest Quebec celebrities, and they're like tens of millionaires.
They're making money. Damn. Yeah. The French support their own.
We got to learn French. Yeah. We've got to get on it. Okay, right. We're going to have a chat. There's a pre-recorded chat with Ellie Taylor, who ironically is talking about traveling the world. Maybe if she's planning her upcoming travel show, she could include Quebec, stay over there and make a bit of dosh. That seems to be the way to go, because money in the UK is drying up fast, but the Quebec, they got dosh to spend. Here is our chat with the brilliant Ellie Taylor. Joining me down the line now, one of the country's top comedians who is getting into something very exciting. We'll get into that in just a moment. We are going into the world of travel TV. Of course, travel TV is a genre dominated by lots of comedians. You know, you can have Ramesh Ranganathan and his mother, Jack Whitehall getting an enema with his father, maybe even sometimes a female comedian accompanied by a socially acceptable male comedian. Yes, it is, of course, a lovely but very male-dominated industry, but the tide is turning, things are changing, and at the forefront of that is our guest today, Ellie Taylor. Hello.
Hello. I don't know if I'm up at the forefront, but wouldn't that be nice?
I think this has the potential. You're getting involved with this thing called Travel Anne. It sounds like a very exciting project, and you'll be traveling the world each episode, meeting inspiring women, breaking boundaries, and redefining leadership in travel. How excited are you to get into Travel Anne?
Well, let's see if it happens. So this is a campaign by Intrepid Travel, who've done some research on travel TV, and they found out that only 23% of travel TV shows in the last year were female-fronted, which is a crazy stat, really. But I think we all kind of have noted it. You watch telly, like you said, it's a lot of blokes sort of usually on a little jolly, having a laugh, getting drunk, being silly. But and they're really good. They're really good shows, but it's so male-heavy. There's such a lack of equality and parity there, that what Intrepid are trying to do is trying to sort of highlight this issue and try to encourage more female fronted shows to be commissioned. So they've come up with this idea of a show, Travel Anne. We've created a little pitch for it, and yeah, I mean, if it happens, I'll be there with my backpack and my passport, and I'm ready to go.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, I mean, you're one of the perfect people to go for this. I think you're such an excellent comedian and presenter. What made you take on this project? Obviously, those stats are pretty damning. It's not a very equal industry in terms of Travelog TV. Was there something that inspired you to take this on?
Yeah, I think it was exactly like you said. It was just a really sort of, you know, crazy stat to read. It really sort of made it hit home. And it's certainly something that I've sort of noticed at home and spoken about with my, you know, family. I remember me and my mum being like, why are there no women doing travel shows, or hardly any women doing travel shows? So it felt like a very natural fit when they came to me with these stats. I was like, well, of course it feels like a great idea to kind of amplify them. So yeah, I was really happy to get involved.
Fantastic. Yeah, it is weird because it's such a there is, you know, extra considerations when you're a woman traveling. You know, people more want to explore different things, they have different safety concerns. What are you hoping to sort of, if Travel Anne goes ahead, and you know, Godspeed, hope it does, what are you hoping to sort of show the world with this platform?
I mean, just that women can go and gallivant and have fun too. Do you know what I mean? Like, it shouldn't be just the blokes who get to do it. Women are very good at just talking rubbish and being funny, because that's, you know, comedians, that's our job. And whatever your gender, you can do that. So it seems very odd that it's just sort of the I don't know, that blokes have dominated it for ages. It makes people, I mean, people doing the press for this, lots of people have said, like, why do you think it is? Why are there more men doing it than women? And I genuinely don't know. There's no good reason for it, because there's just so many amazing women sort of within the entertainment world in the UK, or worldwide, but yeah, if we're looking UK specifically, that could obviously jump on board and create brilliant shows. So yeah, it's just a massive gap in the market. And especially the other research that Intrepid have done, like 80% of holiday booking decisions are made by women. Like, it's vast. And the majority of viewers are bored of the same kind of blokes on a road trip kind of style. People want a shift in the genre. So Intrepid are just like, hey guys, here are the stats, let's change things.
Yeah, it's the perfect time to change things. And it's so interesting as well, that sort of gender imbalance in admin. I always think this, doing my stand-up, I'd love a strong female lesbian core audience, because they are hot on buying tickets. They're getting it in the calendar, they're getting the admin done, and clearly this stat, 80% of holiday booking by women, that backs that up. So yeah, it's good. It's a market that is clearly very interested and, you know, important. Absolutely. In the travel world, that's not being catered to. One of the questions here, oh sorry,
there's
go
a
on
line in. In a vid- No, there's a line in the video that we made to like the pitch for the show where it said a lot of international disputes would be solved a lot quicker if there were some bridesmaids involved. And that is so true.
Yeah, absolutely. If we could just get all the world leaders into like a WhatsApp group called, you know, Zanti Hen or something like that, and we'd get everything sorted. It'd be perfect.
Sorted. Love it.
I was going to, one of my questions here on the sheet is sort of like, how do you, sorry, spoiler alert, I've got prep sheets here. I don't want to ruin the illusion of this spontaneous interview. But one of the questions is, how do you get across that message whilst, you know, still being funny and maintaining comedy? But I suppose, actually, that maybe that's a bit of a silly question, because the message is you are funny and you're entertaining to watch. As you say, women can gallivant. Who are some of your, if you could take a few female comedians with you on the road, who would be your go-to friends?
Who would I like to take with me? I'd like to take with me Jess Fosterkew. I'd take Lou Sanders. I'd take Mel Giedroyc. I'd happily take, do you know the singer Self-Esteem?
She's yeah.
I think she'd be an absolute hoot in a car. I mean, there's just so many. There's so many.
That's an amazing list. Also, they all bring something very different to the table. From like I Lou would bring absolute chaos, and Jess would bring, you know what, safety. I'd feel so safe in the hands of Jess Fosterkew on any travels. That is a good choice.
Thank you.
What is your personal experience with travel? What's the sort of favourite destinations you've taken yourself to, and the favourite adventures you've had over the years?
What have I done? I mean, my holidays are very family focused now. So the most adventurous I've got recently is sort of Centre Parcs at half term, which was quite scary at points, to be fair.
Yeah, that's pretty chaotic.
But I do enjoy just a sort of a summer med holiday, you know, anything. Like, I'm a big fan of Majorcas, love Majorcas.
Oh, yeah.
So just sort of sun and sea and nice food. Thank you very much. That'll do me.
Oh, that sounds dreamy. You're making me here in, I'm currently in Islington, and it's like, it's fine. The weather's nice, but, you know, it's not quite a Mediterranean beach holiday.
It's not Mallorca, is it?
No, you're making me pine for it. Well, and look, hey, if the travel industry wants an advert for it, you're already winning hearts and minds. Here in the studio, I'm going to be booking a holiday straight after this.
Wicked. Oh, thank you.
Obviously, one of the key elements of a travelogue is a sort of a strange backstreet restaurant with some unusual local food. Is there a meal in your travels that stands out, the most unusual thing you've eaten abroad?
Oh, I had some pretty weird things in Russia. My partner used to live there. So, I had some sort of, it was like sort of profiteroles with sausages at one point. it was odd times. Very hit and miss in Russia, the food.
Yeah,
some of the food
I can imagine.
Was fantastic. But when we went to sort of more the regional places, it was... interesting, I'd say.
Yeah, that does sound very unusual. Profiteroles and sausages.
Yeah, and sausages.
Were the profiteroles savoury? Were they stuffed with savoury stuff?
They were savoury, yeah, but it was all very odd.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's maybe not the best time to travel to Russia, but you're interested in trying profiteroles and sausages, and my final quickfire question here is: what story would your suitcase say about you? What is your what impression do you think you give off in your packing and what you pack and your priorities?
Well, I've recently discovered packing cubes within the last few years. It's changed my life. So now I'm incredibly organised. On the way there, on the way back, it's always flipping chaos. But way there, everything is compartmentalised and beautifully ordered.
Gorgeous. Yeah, well, the luxury of planning for a holiday, you've got weeks and weeks of thinking, oh, here's what I'm going to take. And then on the way back, it's like, oh, God, it's 10 a.m. checkout. Everything just...
Exactly.
Perfect. Oh, amazing. Well, look, I really, really hope that Travelan takes off, because there is clearly a missing market out there. I think you're the perfect person to front this. Thank you so much for joining me, Ellie.
Thank you. No worries.
Have a lovely afternoon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Ellie Taylor there, talking about the travelogue scene, the TV travel world, and its need for more female presenters. Now, back in the studio, I'm here with the lovely Bobby Mayer. Hello.
Hello.
Did you enjoy? We had a quite leisurely break there. We had a 3-minute ad and then 8-minute pre-record. We've just been having a nice time.
Yeah.
It's chill.
I could live here, I think.
Is it the air conditioning?
It's the air conditioning, the carpet. I don't have I just have like wood floors.
But like nice wood floors?
No. They're whatever the cheapest wood floor you can get that's not really wood. But whenever I see a carpeted room, my standards for life are quite low. I just think, I could live in this room. I just think I don't need a pillow. I could roll up a shirt. I could sleep on the carpet.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a good room. Nice comfy walls.
It is lovely here in the studio. It's too much, I think. We don't need this level of grandeur. As comedians, we like being shoved in the kitchens as green rooms and like, this is luxury.
Yeah.
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 What a nice way to live though, that you're like, a carpet is, oh great, a carpet, I'm happy.
I wouldn't say I never said happy. I said alive.
Content. Alive. Alive. That's all we can ask for, alive.
Yeah. Nobody's talking about happiness. I don't know what would have to happen for me to feel that.
Look, give Bobby Mara a carpet and he will maintain his life.
Any man who sees a room that's carpeted and thinks I could live here probably hasn't felt joy in a while.
Yeah, that's not the sentence of a well man.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm good.
Good, yeah.
I'm just not happy.
No, is anyone ever happy?
Is anyone? I think that's just who knows.
I've tried this as a joke before, but people get too upset by it, like crowds. Sure. I always go, do you ever see someone smiling and think to yourself, God, I wish I was thick.
Yeah.
I wish I was really stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. I envy them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, 100%.
If I, you know those people who are just like infectiously happy.
Mm-hmm.
If I could kill one of them to get it, I would. if I could just a trade, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'll get. Oh yeah, sorry, sir, but you've had it for long enough. It's mine now.
Yeah, there should be some sort of share scheme, and if that has to be done via murder, then fine.
Yeah,
we can arrange that.
Yeah. They can feel all my misery in one moment.
I like that sort of the physics of that. There's a fantasy novel in that, how that works. I like that.
If I was a more dedicated writer, I'd write it.
As we've established, you can't get into that rhythm until you've got a carpet.
Until I'm laying on this carpet 24 hours a day, I don't think I could write that book.
Yeah. Well, look, we can arrange that. We can have a sort of Bobby Mare lion, can't we? Yeah. Producer Kieran's nodding in the corner.
Okay.
Come along. We'll have a sleep.
I feel like after about 2 hours, you'd be like, okay, Bobby, this was a fun joke. But
yeah. You gotta go
now.
You're
gonna have to leave.
Yeah. Well, look, I was going to play you something. Speaking of the creative process.
Yes.
And of writing.
Yes.
You recently hosted a show with Tim Renko, The Top Secret.
Comedy Club. Yes, I did.
Indeed.
Yes. Yes.
How was that? Was that fun?
That was great. I did a show. It was called Late Night Dark Show. It was me and Tim. And then it's just fun because my comedy doesn't, like, I hosted the show.
Yeah.
And so it was fun. I don't host very often because my act, when I get on stage... And just like, I'm not a good beginning of the show. It's hard to describe my act, but it's just quite abrasive. So if people are told it's a dark show and then I start and then a couple minutes in, I'm, you know.
Yeah, you got that grace.
I have that grace. So it was a great time. Mm-hmm. And it's just good to, do something. Put on your own thing, you know.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of self-starting. When I started a comedy, I was like running my own gigs just all the time.
Yeah.
A, because there's nothing around me, but B, because like just you're in control.
Yeah.
You choose your audience, your venue. It's lovely. Yeah.
You used to live in Bristol, right?
No, I just used to gig a lot in Bristol.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I had this idea that you lived in Bristol. You never lived there.
No. Loads of people think that, though. But just I got in with the Bristol like comedians that and was gigging there like once a week at one point.
Yeah, they're all so friendly.
Yeah, very, very friendly. Some of them have got that sort of infectious energy that you'd kill for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd have to kill like one a year to keep it. And then eventually I'd be the Bristol comedy scene.
Yeah, oh, that'd be great.
And then I'd be happy.
Yeah, you wouldn't need to keep
empire,
killing.
And then I'd be like, oh, it was all for nothing. They could have all lived.
If only they'd succeeded their knights to me.
Yeah. They would have just given me the power I didn't know I craved.
That is the answer to all your problems. If you're feeling upset, you just need power. That's what we need. It's absolute monarchy.
If there's anything we're learning from the news, it's that power makes people happy.
Yes, exactly. A lesson to take away from our headlines. I wanted to ask you about the creature. You're not doing an Edinburgh show or anything this year.
I'm not doing an Edinburgh show, but I'm always doing something. Yeah,
always turning over material. And
yeah, sure.
I wanted to ask you, because there's this thing that happens when you're doing a work in progress,
yes,
where you have to tie it all together at the end.
That's a very British idea.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, that North America is much more
you do it like an essay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
You have a conclusion at the end, and then I learned that it is good to be nice. And the end.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, it's very British and it is very essay structured.
Yes.
I wanted to play this clip. This is from Paddy McGuinness's tour.
Okay.
In the mid 2000s.
This is his learning moment.
This is his big learning moment. So he's talking about. Do you know George Formby?
No.
He's from the like 20s and 30s. He played the banjo and it was all very innuendo-y.
Okay. So
you might know his song, When I'm Cleaning Windows. And it sounds like that. Anyway, point is, he's doing a whole bit about how George Formby was inappropriate. And this is the end of his show, his big finale.
We're all adults, Glasgow, right? We all like a double entendre, right? Now, I can live with, it's a little bit sticky, come and have a nibble. I can live with that. But the kids all round me flock. This lad makes Glitter look like a fucking choir boy. I don't know how we're going to solve knife crime and gun crime, right, but I was brought up with a little bit of discipline. And I think if we had a bit more discipline and a lot more respect for each other, we might just sort it out. Thanks for listening tonight, Glasgow. Good night.
What? So he's talking about cum.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's talking about, and then he just says we should solve knife crime.
It's one of my favourite out of context. I don't even think putting it in context salvages that at all.
No, the context is there is no context.
Yeah, I forgot how long the build-up was. So it's just 20 seconds of you, just very confused face, like, okay, yeah, fine, this is fine, stand up. And then the switch. It's fun, isn't it?
I like that he just wants to let people know that he's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how we're going to solve knife crime and gun crime, but I was brought up with a bit of respect. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. I just like the comedians have this idea that I think it comes from inflated ego, a bit of inflated ego, where we think that people like need to hear from us.
Yes, yeah, we are the oracles.
Yeah, and they're just sitting there being like, listen, I just paid a babysitter to have a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't necessarily think you're a genius. I'm not looking.
Yeah, you for know, the answers. Yeah,
for
yeah.
the answers.
My friend Gareth always used to have a great philosophy on comedy. It was like where it's like a parody of public speaking.
Yeah.
So like the public speaking we regularly consume is intellectual, like scientists telling us here's what's happening, yeah. here's what we found out. Moral, like you know religious figures, priests being like this is how we should live, or powerful, like politicians telling us what's going to happen.
Yes.
So all stand up is very wanky, but all stand up should eschew one of those elements. So like if you know how the world should run and you're smart and you're very moral, you should have no power. So you should be like, the joke should be that you're powerless.
Yeah.
To do anything. Or you should have loads of power and be really smart, but you're completely amoral. Or, you know, any combination of those things. But if you are powerful, smart, and moral, why the fuck are you doing comedy?
Yes.
Why aren't you running this country? Why aren't you fixing things? And yeah, there's a few comics who are like, why are you doing this? You have loads of power and money, and apparently you're very smart and moral, so...
Yeah, I mean, I am moral.
Yeah, no.
I just feel silly saying it all out loud because, yeah. like most people, I don't live by my morals.
Well, but then also, never mind living by morals. You don't do your stand-up comedy isn't 100% within your morals. Like we don't go out and do stand-up about how we're perfect people.
No, that's just self-evident.
Yeah.
I don't need to tell anyone. I just walk down the street and goes, that guy looks like he's got it together.
Yeah, because you said your comedy is very abrasive because it's so moral.
Yeah,
this is so gratingly moral.
I am an arbiter of morality.
That's what people say, but I read that at that Chortle review.
Oh,
yeah,
good,
yeah,
yeah, good.
Yeah, I love that bit. And maybe we'll play, at the end, we'll play out Paddy McGuinness. He could sort of see out the show.
Well, yeah, I'm a divorced man. Paddy's a divorced man. And then him and his wife, they lived together for years.
Oh, really?
After divorce, because they have kids. And, yeah, that seemed like that would suck.
Well, you couldn't do that. You don't think
not that I couldn't do that. Just I don't think who wants to do that.
Yeah, it's not beneficial to anyone, surely.
Except the kids, I guess. Because it was impressive. They both just were like, yeah, we still live together.
No, that's I couldn't do that. I think if I had a minor falling out with a friend, I couldn't even just like. Live in the same city as them.
Really?
You'd yeah. leave city? I would. I'd move. I'd move to Quebec. I'd learn French, and I'd make my living as an artist in Quebec.
This is good. How quickly do you think you could learn a language?
I reckon, like, solidly give up my time to it.
Yeah.
I reckon I could be fluent in a year.
Okay.
In most languages. Maybe decently possible in 6 months.
Really?
Yeah. I think if you really, really dedicate your time
to it. I reckon after about a month, I'd just decide, looks like I don't speak to people anymore.
You don't think you'd assimilate?
Yeah, I'm not a speaker anymore. I'm more a mime guy.
Which I suppose is apt for France.
Yeah. That'd be good for me. I move my hands a lot. I wave. And I spend a lot of time alone because I don't speak the language of the locals.
Have you seen that ginger Canadian guy like walking around waving at people?
Yeah.
Why doesn't he speak to anyone?
He smiles for too long.
Just pointing at patisseries. Like, you want the croissant?
Yeah.
Oh, that's. I have this beautiful image. I want to see it fulfilled of you just sort of wandering around, staring and waving at people.
And so, well, sometimes I'll be, if I'm in a good mood, I do have the urge to make a friend on a train.
Yeah.
And it never goes well. Because I think the energy when I'm in a good mood is a bit manic, and then I'll just be like, how are you? And someone just looks at me like, is this the last day of my life? And I'm like, no, I just wanted to make a friend. Okay.
Yeah, I think maybe that infectious joy that you could kill for.
Well, I get it. When I do get it, I get a real burst of it, and then people are afraid of it.
Yeah, I think maybe you shouldn't be afforded that power.
No.
Because even though you're just acting it, very well acted, by the way, if any casting directors are listening, take my word for it. Beautiful facial expressions.
Thank you.
Put him in stuff. But it was intense. It was a lot. And I don't often say this to people, especially not my lovely dear friends, but I don't think you should have joy, Bobby.
Okay.
It doesn't sit well on you.
Okay, I'll sit with where I'm at.
Yeah. Just have occasional smile at a carpet, and then that's it, I think.
Okay, that's what I'll take. I'll take what I can get. I take what I'm given.
On that bleak note, we're going to head into the adverts now. I hope that makes you feel ready to buy things. That's what I hope we've put you in a capitalistic mood.
You're definitely in the mood to feel need.
Yes. So fill those needs with these adverts. Thank you very much.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the final segment here on Pulse of the Nation with my good friend Bobby Mayer. We've been talking about the departure of dear Kim Woodburn. You are familiar with Kim's work?
Familiar, yeah.
So she's a British icon, a gay icon in many circles. Last week, actually, on the show, we broke the news of her death. Hannah Bichkovsky was here and sort of shocked the nation by revealing Kim had sadly passed away last week. I thought, we bedded it with a lot of respect because we do love Kim here. But I then went home and I found this clip of Lorraine Kelly, who famously didn't like Kim. They didn't get on Loose Women and stuff. They were always like feuding.
Okay, so they disagree on their issues.
Definitely, yes. Kim Woodburn was a bit sidelined on Loose Women and by certain like people in that sort of like ITV daytime circles.
Okay,
but you'd think you'd put away your feud for the professional announcement of Kim Woodburn's death. This is how Lorraine Kelly announced Kim Woodburn's died.
Kim Woodburn, who I'm sure you know, well, she's died at the age of 83. Famous, of course, for How Clean Is Your House and her controversial time on Celebrity Big Brother. A representative for Kim said, "It is with immense sadness that we let you know our beloved Kim Woodburn passed away yesterday following a short illness."
Absolutely. No care, no pretense of care. Kim Woodburn, I'm sure you know. Well, she's died. That was it.
There was no, we know each other?
No, not like we've worked together before, previously of ITV. No, just like, Kim Woodburn, I'm sure you know. She's died.
Yeah, like a stranger.
Yeah, brutal. Absolutely brutal.
But I guess if you hate someone, what's the other option? It's either you say, you know that woman who's one of the people I hate the most in the world? Well, this is weird for me because she's died and I'm not feeling much about it. So you have to go the other way.
I would respect that.
No, but you can't do that. You can't say that. I've always, it's always sad when someone that you love dies. But actually what's worse is when someone you hate dies because
you can't celebrate.
You can't celebrate. And everyone's like, oh, Joanne's dead, and you have to sit there and be like, yeah, and then they look at you like, we know you fucking hated her.
Yeah. Oh, I had this recent, and not with somebody I hate, but like somebody tangentially who like was controversial, and it's all like, RIP, we had our issues, but and it's like, just why are you doing this pretending thing? Like, it's good for you that I don't know, it's weird.
It is. But I can see why Lorraine had. I don't know. Who knows why they hated each other?
Yeah. I don't know, actually. But I want to dig deeper into it. Maybe that will be our investigation next week. Tune in. We'll find out.
I think that should be a spin-off podcast. Find out about the feud.
We could do this. I know you said you hadn't started any businesses, but I think we've got Diary of a CEO, where yes. You're the diary, I'm the CEO.
Yes.
We can start this sort of Find the Feud series. Okay. We start with Lorraine and Kim. There's so many feuds we can sort of dig
there's
into.
There's a lot of feuds.
Yeah, I think there's content aplenty here, Bobby.
Okay.
We can do it.
Good. Let's never speak again.
Are you a person who's dragged along by what people suggest?
It looks like it now, yeah.
It does seem like it, yeah.
No, I'm not that person. I leave parties when I leave parties.
Good.
I'm pretty...
How are you with just saying no, turning stuff down?
I love doing it.
Yeah, it's the best.
If someone calls and says, hey, do you want to? I just go, no.
Yeah.
No,
that's it. Just halfway through the sentence, no.
Because, well, not always, but in the past, you know, in my 20s, I'd end up doing things. And when you agree to do something you don't want to do, you're just there walking around a wine garden thinking, this sucks. Then you start getting annoyed at the person that invited you there, but you didn't want to go there in the first place.
So it's on your fault,
for not saying no.
There are so many activities that suck as well. These things that we spend £25 and 3 hours of our life to do.
I get it. You can only stare at a wall for so long, so we have to mix it up with life.
With some carpet occasionally.
I feel like the level of activities could go up, you know.
Yeah, I went on a gin tour in Portsmouth.
Yeah.
We got our own distillery there. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. The guy that ran it was pretty chill, no nonsense, wasn't doing all this sort of tour bullshit. But I forgot midday, 2 p.m. on a midweek, that tour crowd was the worst group of people.
And, yeah.
You know, it's sort of shorted, sandaled, 56-year-old dads who have something funny, quote-unquote, to say about everything.
And they just want to get wrecked.
Yeah, that's what they just want. They're, are getting upset that the gin samples aren't large enough because they can't actually get drunk off of it. And it's just this is a single road. You've had to drive here.
Yeah.
How are you getting home?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Illegally,
yeah, yeah. Well, you've famously done clips about British driving and British roads.
I have done. I've done a joke about British roads, yeah.
It's very good. I go recommend. Go follow Bobby. I've written down your Instagram here. At Bobby Mayer Comedian.
Thank you.
Did I get that right?
Hope so.
I said it before I was able to read it, and I'm like, I think I've got this. Yeah. Very recently, on that British roads thing, you tracked down a content thief.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, yeah, and I stole his banana because he stole my joke.
I have so many questions. Is that really him in the video?
Well, yeah.
That's amazing. So you do this joke about country roads in Britain. It's very, very funny. Do go check it out. Somebody steals your content.
Yes.
And takes your likes.
Yeah.
That's the premise of your video, that you've stolen...
You stole my likes, I stole a banana.
Yeah. But you didn't go plan to steal his banana. You just said, I'm going to steal something.
Well, I got lucky. Yeah.
He's holding a banana. Did he chase you down or anything?
No, I think he's just perplexed. I'll say this. If someone slights me, no, I'm coming for you.
There you go. The warning has been issued here on national internet radio.
Yes.
It's got international, I suppose, if it's on the internet.
Yes.
Bobby Mel will come for you if you slight him.
Yes. Yeah.
And you've done it before. You tracked down a man who kept commenting on your videos.
I got that guy too, yeah.
That was great.
He kept commenting, chicken wire, chicken wire, chicken wire. So I went to his work and I shouted chicken wire to him.
Yeah, it was.
And guess what? He thought he might get fired. It didn't go well.
Was it Carphone Warehouse or something? It was just some random
It was an EE.
It was an EE, yeah. You're just in this middle of the EE.
He was an assistant manager of an EE.
Yelling at him, chicken wire, chicken wire.
Yeah, well, he trolled me for 10 years. He did have a going.
Yeah, yeah. Other than his worrying about being fined, did he find it funny?
No.
No?
No.
That's hilarious.
In the moment, he found it funny. It was the word chicken wire. It's not like I outed him as a racist, you know?
No.
And he didn't find it funny at all. He found it funny in the moment, and then he didn't like that he was in the New York Post. So, he was in a lot of newspapers. So then he, what ended up happening was, he was upset. And then his brother messaged me very angrily, telling me he was going to get fired. So I messaged him saying, hey, are you going to get fired? And he was like, I might get fired. Then he didn't get fired.
Yeah.
Because they can't fire you for someone saying the word chicken wire at you.
No.
And then he told me he apologized for it. He apologized for trolling me. And then he said, you know, I was a big fan of yours, but you've lost a fan today.
You never presented as a fan before.
This troll who's been trolling me for 10 years is no longer my fan. Very sad day for me.
That's so funny. That's interesting to see the follow-up.
Yeah.
I didn't know what happened with it.
Yeah.
That's so common, though. People would be commenting abuse or it happens with Trusty Hog sometimes, of the podcast I work on, yes, where people will comment something hateful or critical, and then I'll reply to it, and then they're like, "Oh, I love the podcast," or like, "Oh, I love Helen," and I'm like, "Why?"
Some
why
people
did you say
think
this
it's because people think they're funny,
yeah,
but they're not funny. And there's no audience there to tell them they're not funny, so they'll just keep making the same bad jokes over and over.
And that's exactly what happened on this gin tour.
Yeah.
Nobody was there because the gin tour guy, he's got to accommodate these people that have paid for the gin tour.
Sure.
And I can't be the dick being like, "Can you shut the fuck up? I don't care."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just have to sit there and eat it.
Yeah, I think they're good. Because the lessons are plenty to take away from today's show. Don't slight Bobby Mair. He will track you down.
Yes.
He will find you. He's got a track record. He'll steal your banana, or worse.
Yeah. Two for two.
Two for two. Bit of carpet, all you need. Bit of joy in life from carpet. Stop me. You're not as funny as you think you are. That goes for me too, here on this
everybody
radio show.
Everybody.
We're much less funny than we think we are. And then, I guess, you know, bit of respect will probably solve knife crime.
Great.
Yeah, good messages. Good. And this isn't an educational show, but we think we've learned something. I'm going to quickly take us into the Facebook forums with our last 5 minutes.
Okay.
Are you a Facebook dweller, Bobby? Do you?
You know, it tells me when people's birthdays are, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's good. That's a nice element of it. So this is a post from the Salisbury Notice Board. We went into town yesterday, and there were teenage boys riding around wearing balaclavas. Very hot weather for balaclava, but each to their own. And at one point, at least approaching girls to make inappropriate comments. I don't know how... You have to be quite close, surely, to hear these inappropriate comments, unless they're being yelled, I don't know. But I think they're just assuming that they're inappropriate comments. But the point is, they pose the question at the end, are the balaclavas currently legal? Are they legal? Do you know, Bobby?
I don't know if balaclavas are legal, but, you know, when people choose to wear balaclavas and it's warm...
Mm.
That is telling.
Yeah. There was a photo...
Anybody who's like, "Oh, I just need to hide my face for the next 10 minutes." I'm like, I don't know if I want to be near whatever that guy's about to get up to. Like, why do you need no one to know what you looks like for the action you're about to partake in?
Yeah, yeah. There was a photo viral recently on the Tube.
It's like just either crime or you're in a Bonnie Blue video.
Yeah. You're on the way to the Bonnie Blue queue.
Yeah.
This photo on the Tube was this guy, like, topless, in shorts, sweating, stood next to a robe man in a massive puffer jacket,
okay,
and tracky bottoms and a balaclava, and it's like, okay, yes, come on,
yeah,
you've committed too hard here.
Yeah,
but yeah, interesting post that caught my eye. I thought that was quite oh yes, oh, this is okay, this might be too mental, this we might have to end on this because this is quite
okay.
Intense. This is from my local Facebook forum. I won't out it to expose myself, but somewhere in Portsmouth. Has anyone else noticed the huge flower delivery vehicle that parks in Tangier Road? I've given away the location. Fuck's sake. Anyway,
you're really giving it away.
The doors are open and the vans appear. They back right up to the lorry. We have no florist in Tangier Road. Very suspicious. I wonder exactly what's being delivered. And then the comment underneath it is, do you reckon it might be drugs? And then the original poster has said, more like people. So they think that there's a human trafficking ring happening under the guise of flower delivery. This is just the intense sort of conspiracy theories that come out of Facebook.
Yeah, you can have no florist, but people still sell flowers probably, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think what's happening is probably someone's bringing flowers.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a distribution of flowers from Tangier Road. And somebody commented being like, yeah, I work for this florist. It's just a florist.
I've never heard that Portsmouth is bereft of flowers. Like, there's no flowers in Portsmouth.
No, like, yeah, we've got shortage.
Yeah, the flowerless city. Look, go to Portsmouth for the buildings because nothing will grow there. There are no bees. If you want to know what Earth will look like in the year 2100, go to Portsmouth. There's no bees or plants. And they must bust them in, for the public does not have an appetite for them.
Yes, that's exactly what's happening. We've got a post-apocalyptic flower shortage in Portsmouth. It's not people
trafficking.
And someone's
suspicious.
Yes, don't you worry, dear Avril, for your concerns. I like that, the idea the Portsmouth city sign is just like the flowerless city. Portsmouth, yeah. The flowerless city.
Yeah.
And yours is, what is it?
Seaforth. Not near the sea, not a fort.
Not a fort. Sit, die.
Yeah.
Whoa, stare, sit, die.
Stare, sit, die.
Yeah, lovely stuff. Right, well, look, this show has just gone... I always have this problem, Bobby, is that I'm with nice people that
you have
I like
too much to say.
And it just disappears. So we're in our last minute now. As I've already said, go follow Bobby at Bobby Mair Comedian, M-A-I-R for reference. Have you got anything particularly coming up that you want to promote?
No, I'm going to be... living here now, so maybe I'll chime in once in a while when you have a guest, but that's about it.
Yeah, that'd be nice. It'd be nice to have you back sometime. Okay. You can follow Ellie, Ellie Taylor, at Ellie Jane Taylor. This show, at Pulse of the Underscore Nation. I'm at Stand Up Andrew. Thank you to Kieran and Yasmin in the production booth, and Fubon Radio for hosting us as they do every week. And I think it's only apt. Surely the last word of the show should go to the iconic Paddy McGuinness.
Let's give it back to Paddy.
Thank you very much, Bobby.
I don't know how we're going to solve knife crime and gun crime, right, but I was brought up with a little bit of discipline. And I think if we had a bit more discipline and a lot more respect for each other, we might just sort it out. Thanks for listening tonight, Glasgow. Good night!
FUPAR Radio.